I found myself in a duality. Am I worthy because I don't look like my cousins? Am I worthy because people question my heart because of my exterior?
I am thrilled today to be with my friend Mark Sterling. He is such an amazing person and also has an amazing story. And so we're going to talk today about culture, and we're going to talk about success. And Mark, I am thrilled to welcome you to Culture Matters. So welcome. And how long has it been since you and I met? We've known each other for quite some time now, right?
You know, it's probably 8 to 10 years right now by way of a mutual friend. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then a couple of years ago, you were driving through North Carolina where I had a conference and you stopped in. And the thing that I noticed about you, just your sense of just your presence and your sense of humility. And also, I think it was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful car you were driving. So you've been very successful. You are the vice president of sales of Epic Trading. Is that correct? Epic Trading?
Yes, Epic Trading, yes.
And Epic stands for what? There's an acronym that goes with that, right?
Absolutely. Epic is an acronym. It stands for Exceptional People, Incredible Compensation.
Wow. Exceptional people, incredible compensation.
Yes.
So people are going to look at this or listen to this and they say, well, why is Ricardo having Mark Sterling on Culture Matters? And the reason is because you have one of the most unique stories I have ever heard. Now, we have a similarity because we both have bicultural backgrounds, right? People know me, they know about me. My dad's Puerto Rican. My mother was an orphan from Kentucky. And so I have that bicultural background, very dysfunctional, but you are Black Irish.
Yes.
Correct?
That's very true.
So tell us about that. Tell us. Now, most people would look at you and they would see you, you look white.
Yes.
You didn't grow up in a white environment, did you?
That's very true. So my mother is Black African American and my dad was Irish. So they got together and they had casual encounter. I am a byproduct of that encounter. I was reared in on my mother's side of the family from Baltimore, Maryland, and I always said, so, you know, we call it be more careful, right? And absolutely phenomenal upbringing, incredible family. All my family, all my cousins, my aunts, all African American. I only identified myself as Black African American growing up, even outside of my exterior look. I consider myself, my culture, to be African-American and Black. I had never had that exposure or those experiences of anything other than that.
What was it like? Because on the surface, and I always say skin color is very superficial, right?
Yes.
And in fact, I always say we need to stop talking about color. We need to start talking about culture, because color is superficial and something no one controls, right? But here you are, you look white, and you're in a totally Black neighborhood in Baltimore. Your mother's Black. What was that like for you?
You know, it's okay when people know you because they know you.
Right.
And when someone looks at you, they're obviously the prejudgments that happen, which come from the word, that's where the word prejudice comes from, the prejudgment.
Right. Absolutely.
Before you have enough information. And I always say that people get skeptical about sometimes your motives. People get skeptical about sometimes your potential cultural appropriation. We didn't use that word growing up, but maybe you dressed a certain way. Oh, he's trying to be Black, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Or my language was a certain way. He's trying to speak a certain way. I wasn't speaking a certain way. That's who I was. That was everything in me. It was that, right? So All I knew was my experiences. So I think if you put someone, regardless of what they look like, in a certain climate, a certain environment, they will have a very strong leaning toward that environment because that is all they know, right? And again, so for me, African-American, Black, it's a culture, not just a complexion.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So what about for your mom? So here she is, you know, kind of taking around this little white kid, you know?
Yes.
White, right? And
absolutely.
Black woman and the father's nowhere. You didn't meet your dad till many years later, right? Or did you ever meet your dad? Or how'd you come across your father?
That's a great story. So I never met my father. Matter of fact, I always wondered, you know, why I looked like I did. And I didn't really get a chance to embrace or understand that until my mid-20s.
Oh my.
But it wasn't until I'm 51 years old right now. a few Christmases ago, I decided to take the Ancestry DNA test. I'm not promoting a particular company. That was the one. And I really wanted to have a better understanding of what my makeup was, not so much to reconnect with anyone. But I said, you know what, it would be great to really understand my composition, right? So I did that, and it was amazing. And I found out that I was 10%, you know, Nigerian, and there was Mali, and there was Ghana, and then there was, wait a minute, there was 48% Irish. Now, growing up, it was my understanding that I was Black and Italian. And anyway, so long story short, in that experience, it said that I had a few close relatives that I didn't know their names, so I reached out to them, and they were closer than my first cousins by way of, there's a unit of measurement called centimorgans. I won't go into that, but it's how you measure DNA, and it meant that they were either aunts and uncles, grandparents, or half siblings. So I got really piqued as far as my interest, and I reached out to one, and come to find out, I have 5 brothers and sisters that I never knew. And what happened was, the one young lady sent me, who's my sister, I found out, sent me some pictures of her uncle. I said, hey, well, can you send me some pictures of your uncle? Because maybe that could be my dad. And he had blonde hair and blue eyes. And I said, well, I'm not sure if that's the one, right? And so I was losing a little bit of hope. And she said, is it okay if I send you a picture of my father? And I said, sure. And when they sent me the picture of it, the first time in my life, I saw myself. Oh, I was a carbon copy of this image of the one she sent me, and it blew me away.
Blows me away.
Yeah.
So I said,
he had passed several years prior, but there was something liberating about knowing where you came from. Watch this. I don't have to know if he's a good guy, a bad guy. You know, I don't care if he impacted the world positively. I don't care what he was. I had a knowing of where I came from.
That is so fascinating, man. I mean, you and I have several things in common, but one of the things that we have in common, my dad is fairly dark complexion, right? One of 27 kids from mountains of Puerto Rico. And wow. I don't look anything like my father, other than when we walk next to each other.
Okay.
And when people see us walk next to each other, like from behind, they go, oh my God, it's just kid, right?
Right, yeah, the same gait.
But I honestly, when I was like teenager, right? My mom was white, right? And so I got that complexion. But I adopted and adapted to and affiliated with and really loved the Latino culture. I mean, my culture was the Puerto Rican culture. That's what I have always been drawn to, right? Yes. And so when I was an adult, I actually moved back to Puerto Rico. I have spent many years in the Dominican Republic. So like for me, I'm Latino, right?
Right.
And Spanish was my first language, but there were a couple things. One was, I went through a time period when I was a teenager wondering if perhaps I'd been adopted, right? Because I didn't look anything like my father. Or maybe I was from my mom's side and they just didn't want to tell me that I was from a different guy, right?
Right.
And I know that that's not true now, but there was this, and maybe you went through, there's this kind of, I want to say it in Spanish, there's this lucha, which is, we say lucha libre, which is like actual wrestling, you know, like big time wrestling. Lucha libre is like the, not MMA, but, you know, just like,
WWE, maybe.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And I had this battle inside of me. It was an identity battle, right? Who am I?
Sure.
It's fascinating. So it's one of the reasons I always gravitated to just your story and who you are. I think it's fascinating, man. So
if you don't mind on that one part, you talk about the identity struggle, and I found myself in a duality with myself. I found myself often having conversations of, am I worthy because my last name was different? Am I worthy because I don't look like my cousins? Am I worthy because people question my heart because of my exterior? Yes. I had this duality. I had this conflict with myself, and I caught myself not only asking questions, but also providing answers that really had no basis in the truth. I provided answers based on what I needed to comfort myself. For example, so I created stories of not knowing my father. Matter of fact, I had a great story that I lied to myself so much I believed it for 20 plus years that, you know, my father was, you know, my mother's boyfriend, and he was in Vietnam because at the time he made sense around 68, 70, and that he passed then. That's why he wasn't in the picture, right? So I created that story to actually satisfy the gap in my life. So there are times when we're not just, I always say that I was a product of my environment, but I am not a consequence of it, because the consequence comes from the actions and decisions that we make. I was the appointment made by someone else's decision.
Right. Right.
But I was not the future because of my current decision.
Yeah.
And that was totally up to me.
Now you're married, you have children.
Yes.
Beautiful wife. And
thank you.
She's African American, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
And so do you consider your children mixed race, or how do you now, you and your wife, Kat is her name.
Yes.
How do you and Kat approach this with your children? I'm just curious now, because I love culture, and I think it's it's all very interesting, right?
You know, to be very honest, even on 50 now, my children are Black, period, right? They, you know, they're African American. My daughter, my two daughters, and I have a stepdaughter as well, my two daughters, I got them an ancestry DNA test as well. And it was an amazing thing to sit down with my 13-year-old and my 26-year-old and them to go through and see their heritage and see that they're, you know, 25 to 30% Irish, for example, right? Wow. And to see that, you know, that they're 50 to 70%, you know, African-American, or not African, but African descent.
Right.
And to kind of trace back and see all of that and to go back and look at the tree and to see the connection points. So the reality is I believe that they're whole as individuals. So where they're from just fills in part of the puzzle, but each part, none of it says that I'm greater than or less than because of my culture. I am who I am because of what I provide to the world.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. It's just, you know, we all have these gifts, and if we can provide gifts to the world but understand where we came. See, there's nothing wrong with history. We have to know where we came from to understand our past, right?
Yes.
So, but we use that as a foundation. So I look at that as the historical part, but the human part, the evolution part, the love part is the part that really I instill in them. And what they choose to embrace will be a personal decision.
It's fascinating. So your last name is Sterling.
Yes.
Is that your mom's last name? Was that your father's last? How did you get the last name Sterling?
So one of my mother's closest friends was named Diane Sterling.
Oh.
And because I was born, and that's to say my dad wasn't there because he didn't know I was here. It was a convenient mechanism to name me or give me that last name of someone else. And so for years, I was looking for this guy named Sterling.
Oh, my.
And he wasn't there. So until about the age of 22, what happened for me is I always wanted the last name of my family, the family that I was reared with. Because I thought it further alienated me because I didn't look like them. I didn't have their last name. So I had those conflicts. I mean, they adopted me. What's wrong with me? Why can't I have the same, right? So for me, what happened, I remember very clearly, it was when I was 22 years old. My middle name begins with an A, it's Anthony. And I made a conscious decision to have all of my children's middle name begin with A, Alpha, because we're going to be the beginning of something new. It's the first of all, everything, right? So I have a Anthony, Mark Anthony is my son. And then I have my daughter's middle name is Elijah with an A, means Hebrew for the Lord is our God. Then my next son is Alexander, means greatness. And then my other son is Ashir, begins with A. It actually means great, and it means wealth. So all of these things meant a lot to me. But Sterling, I made a conscious decision that my name did not create me. I created what my name would mean. And it was that one shift when I could reframe and rename that experience that I could say, you know what, I could stand tall in this name. I could stand tall. When people think of me, I want it to be something that, you know what, my kids be okay leaving that picture over the mantle and saying, that's Granddad Sterling. That's because of he embraced it and it meant something to them.
You actually have a private company called Plata Group, which
yes.
in Spanish, plata means silver, right?
Yes, like sterling silver.
Sometimes
yes.
used colloquially to mean money.
Yes.
But it really means silver. So when you the silver group, sterling silver, right? So
yes.
That's kind of cool, I think. And you're just embracing that, right? It's so interesting, Mark, because so many people, like, they struggle with their past. They sometimes reject their past, or they try to reinvent themselves. But what you've chosen to do, I think, is so refreshing, and it's actually so instructive. And that is, this is who I am. This is what I was born into. Yes. This is me. This is me. So I'm going to embrace that, and I'm going to make the best version of me I possibly can make. Right? Which, you're just amazing. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom here. So I want to pivot just a moment here and to your business life.
Yes.
So you've been very involved, very successfully involved in multi-level marketing, correct?
Yes.
And was it the relationships that drew you to that type of industry that you kind of go, this is the type of business where I can have a lot of contact with people? And because that's part of that culture, right? There's a lot of human contact.
Yes.
What drew you into that? And then, of course, you're with Epic now, which I thought the acronym was great. If you want to repeat it, go ahead. But, you know, and then I think the other question that I have, because it could lead us to more conversation and more learning, is do you primarily, in your work, do you primarily really work more with African-American people? Is that the market that you work with and market to? So I'm just curious as to kind of that whole picture for you.
Great questions. I'll make sure I capture all of them.
Yeah.
So the first question was, you know, what got me to the industry? What was that attraction factor? You know, it wasn't money. It wasn't. That was a byproduct of what I thought I could experience. It was not even the people necessarily, but a part of the people. It was hope.
Hmm.
I saw something where I walked into a room and I felt a sense of being. Most people don't join businesses, and especially in my space, for the money. They join because of the mission and the movement. There's something bigger than them that they could be a part of, right? And that's why I tell people, facts tell, but stories sell. So I was wildly attracted to a belonging. I wanted to be a part of something that was greater than me, but that I could still help move the needle in some small way. If it was a body of water, I was a droplet, but my droplet was just as effective and important as the next droplet, but I was a part of a whole, right? You know, it was shortly after 9/11, and I'd lost all my income. I was making multiple six figures. I owned an IT company. And what happened for me in that company is that when 9/11 hit, I lost all my income. So I wanted something that had some additional streams, right? And then I had a car note, and then I had something called family maintenance, right? Some of you may know that it's called child support, right? So I had these things going on, and I wanted some money to come in where I could celebrate zero every month if I didn't work. If I could get to a point where I was good, and I call good, G-O-O-D, getting out of debt. If I could have enough income coming in that whether or not I was working a traditional job, had a contract, or whatever I did for my skill, where I traded my time and talents for money, that I had some other money coming in that at least covered my household bills. And then when that started happening, I said, that's great from a production perspective. How can I go into reproduction? How can I go into a point where I'm serving others and allowing them, at least creating the culture where it's possible? And I don't ever make any complaints or what someone can do, but if we could create the culture where others could have hope and belief,
yes,
that's what really moved me. So for some people think I'm nuts because I'm really service driven, and that's important for me.
So is your market, the market that you work with, predominantly African-American? Is it mixed? Do you
yes,
have a
target? So I get this question all the time. So I'll go to in my current.
So it's not a unique question. So
no, it's not a unique question.
I should go back and ask a unique question then.
No, it's unique, I think, maybe to your audience, because I think a lot of people want to ask it. I think my answer is not unique because I've said it so many times, but it is definitely a question that is posed. So the reality is my current environment, we launched not long ago in this new project with Epic, and we literally are looking at putting in 40,000 new people into the business in the month of September. And we're expecting diversity, socioeconomic, we're expecting ethnic diversity, we're expecting geographic diversity. And here's the one that's really, really amazing. The diversity coming in is also in age. We have Gen X, Gen Y, we have baby boomers. And I pride myself on getting to a point where I like to think I speak a universal language where I can attract myself to different audiences. But the real key at the end of the day is, someone will say, well, Mark, at the beginning, it was all African-American people that I talked to because that was my center of influence, right? That was who I knew, it was family, friends, associates, right? So when people came into the business, I would have people say, hey, can you introduce me to some black people if they were white, for a new market? Or I would go to a conference and I heard some of my friends say, hey, can you bring some Latinos? And it's not that, it's what relationship do you have that can be a conduit into another space? Mm-hmm. And is your voice a voice they can trust down the road? Because they're not just gonna partner with you if they don't know you. And that's why I love your coursework so much. I love that book, right? The book right behind you, because it helps us understand how can we be of influence and impact in other communities, but you have to speak their language and not from an idiom perspective, but from a cultural perspective.
Absolutely. I always tell people, if it's not culturally relevant, it's not relevant, right? If it doesn't speak to that group of people, it doesn't speak.
Yes.
And so this one that's behind me is the 6 Stages of Cultural Mastery, but I have a new one.
Okay.
Coming out in the fall. It's called the 6 Stages of Cultural Selling. And It's specifically how to sell to people in different diverse communities, but with a little bit of an angle of social responsibility and sustainability, right? Where we're really actually growing those communities as well. So I want to do 2 things before we wrap up here. Number one, give us some advice on how to effectively market in the African-American community. I think that's really important information for people. And secondly, I'd like just you to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in some of the racial tensions in our country right now that we're experiencing, just your viewpoint. And so I just, perhaps there are just a few things that I'd like you to speak to, because you can do so with authority.
And so I'll go ahead and caveat everything I'm about to say. These are my personal opinions. I don't speak for an entire demographic of any kind, okay? I can only speak from my personal experiences. If how to market to African-Americans, know some people that like you that are African-American. Know some people that trust you that are in that circle. For me, it's natural because that's what I know, that's who I am. So I think you market, whether it's African-American, white, Latino, Hispanic, you market to those who you have a relationship with. And people will buy from you based on who they trust. And people will follow you based on, John Maxwell has the 6 principles of leadership. And some of those are 5 reasons why people follow people. It's past performance. It's present performance. You have a pleasing personality. So those are 3 that I remember. I'm sorry. But there are 5 reasons.
And I'll start with P, because he was a preacher.
Exactly, right?
So preachers are great with alliteration.
Right, that's a Kojic turn right there. But it was amazing because I think once most of my friends and family would not follow me or listen to me. And I had to recognize that. And I understood later in life that they didn't follow me because they didn't trust my voice. So I learned to get out of the way. And I think here in general, it's how it markets anyone. What you want to do is you want to find someone's pain point, paint the picture, and bring them to the picture. But sometimes you can't see the picture because you're inside the frame. Let me rephrase that. I would get out of the way and let someone hear someone else's story so that they could trust that story. And they will become a third party expert, and that expert will come back and re-edify or say, you know what, you're in good hands with Mark. Sometimes you need that third party validation. I give it to you from a biblical perspective. Jesus was not a master teacher in his hometown. He had to leave his hometown in order to really be heard by a different voice. So sometimes you need to have a third party validation, or remove yourself from your current environment, create the results, and then come back.
You know, because you bring up the Bible, there's a verse in the scripture that says a prophet has no honor in his hometown, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of truth to that. You know, I just give, just like our relationship, our mutual friend, Dwayne Cummings, right? Yeah. When we both met, at a birthday party for his son. I think he said to both of us, you know, Ricardo, you need to get to know Mark. And Mark, you know, I don't know what he told you, but
he did the exact same thing. He pulled me to the side and said, "This is someone you need to know." And he's one of the he's a master connector. I didn't know why he said it. I just knew I needed to keep following him on social media, and we eventually connected, you know, and became closer. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, what's your take on what's going on in our world over the last several months here with all the racial tension, the protests, the killings? Where do you think our country is, and how do you think we can start to begin to heal this?
You know, it's like an onion. There are a lot of layers to this, and I'll give you my take on it. I think a lot of it's being brought to the forefront because social media and cameras and the ability to capture moments is more prevalent. These are not new occurrences, for example. They're just new documented occurrences. Okay, so we'll start there. Now, I'll say this. If you go back, you can look at redlining, for example, in communities right. where African Americans couldn't buy in certain neighborhoods, and you moved out to the suburbs, and there were laws passed where individuals couldn't buy or even resell. So the economic diversity, the gap was wider. I understood that. I personally experienced walking into barbershops when I was small and going to get a haircut, and my best friend, who was obviously African American, would come in, and then they would look at me and ask me, they would tell me to get out the chair because they don't cut my kind of hair when I was already in the chair. I had those experiences. I remember when I went out and I wanted to walk in the first grade, I wanted to walk the cutest girl in class, and it was Lisa, I won't say her last name. I walked her home across the street, and I did it for weeks. I thought she was the cutest thing in the world, right? And then I remember one day she said, "You can't walk me home. My mother said your mother's black," right? So I understand that racism is taught. I understand that she didn't care who I was originally, but her mother cared where I came from, how I was birthed. So the challenges for me.
You know, I want to stop because I want to interject something that you and I, again, have in common here. Yes. Of course, you had this with Lisa in first grade, right?
Yes.
I actually had the same exact thing happen to me, but with my girlfriend that I was actually wanted to marry in college. And I went to her father, and it was a religious family. So out of respect, I went to him and asked him if he would approve marrying his daughter. And we had dated 2 years, and we'd been together.
Right.
And been home. And he looked at me and he said that he did not want her to marry me. And he said, and this is his exact words to me. He says, "Even though you're white, your father isn't."
Wow.
"And I don't want brown children in my family. And that's the risk that I'm not willing to take with you." And that was it. I mean, that was the end of the relationship. And we had dated 2 years. So, you know, even, and people look at both of us, right? And we're both pretty light complected, right? And they don't think that people like us would go through this.
Sure, absolutely.
And, you know, we can't even imagine other people, right? It's real. It's sad.
Right. And my input today is not to change anyone's beliefs. It's to create a conscious interrupt. It's to be provocative in thought. I don't want anyone to believe what I believe. I don't want anyone to think the way I think. I just encourage you to think about someone else's perspective, because once we can change the lenses of our glasses, we can have a different viewpoint.
Absolutely. There's this great picture that I actually use in my coaching and also sometimes in my conferences. And it's of this guy who's on an island, and he's stranded on this island, right? And then this other guy, have you seen this picture? He's lost at sea on this boat, and they just kind of the boat floats in towards the island, and the guy on the island, he looks out and he screams and he says, "Boat!" You know, for him, that's his salvation, right? And the other guy who's lost at sea on the boat, he looks at and he what does he scream out, Mark?
Island.
Land.
Yes.
The most amazing thing about this picture is so simple, is they both see the exact same thing. They come to two very different conclusions.
Correct.
And they're both right.
They're both right. And you know, that's the part right there, is that the division is so strong. Just because the world is a circle and the truth is in the center, if my tangent and your tangent of how we get to the center is different, that doesn't mean they're wrong. It's their approach is different.
Yes.
The approach is different. I've done this exercise in training, for example. I've been fortunate to speak all over the world, in Africa and Europe and places, and I'll put this.
I keep looking for the Pop-Tart every time I hear that ding there, Mark.
I'm sorry, someone, I apologize. Stop it. I'm on my Mac and it's my iMessage, sorry.
No, it's okay.
So the crazy thing is I put the number 6 up, right?
As long as it's strawberry, because that's my favorite Pop-Tart.
Yes. That brings back memories of strawberry quick. So I put the number 6 in front of somebody, but they're looking at it, it looks like a 9.
Yes.
And we're both right. And when we turn it, they see the 6 and I see the 9. We're both right. Sometimes we have to adjust our viewpoint or recognize that it's just different on another side. Another one I do, I remember telling this quick story very, very quick. A young boy was 7 years old. His dad said, "You know, I'll play with you in a few moments. I have a little bit of work to do." His son came back several times. He's 7 years old. That's what they do, right? And guess what? He said, "I'll tell you what," he tore this newspaper up because there's a picture of a globe. And he put it in a hat, and he's putting 100 pieces. He said, "Son, put this globe back." He said, "Put this back together. And when you do it, I'll play with you immediately." He thought he had 30 minutes at a minimum. The son came back in about 3 minutes and it was totally put together. He asked the son, well, how did you put this together so quickly? And he said, what do you mean? He said, it was a globe. It's all these different pieces. But the son saw the other side of the paper, the picture of a man. He said, Daddy, I just put the man together. And I guess the world just happened to fall in place. So when we can put the man together, when we can focus on the individual, that's why network marketing is so special to me. Individuals are so special to me. When you can love on one person, you can change the world.
The parts make the whole, brother.
Yes.
And if the individuals are not whole, there's no way the larger organism can be whole or organization. Yeah. I mean, that's my message. You cannot have a healthy and culturally skilled organization, community, country, if it is filled with people who are culturally unhealthy and unskilled.
Yes.
You have to heal the people.
You asked a question earlier. How do you help the Black community? I think this is how we help the community in general, our country. We must get back to a nuclear family. We must get to a point where fathers are in the homes. We must get to a point where the system, the largesse, the social services allows for families to live together, and they're not penalized because someone's not married, but they want to have a family together. You can't say that the father can't live in the household in order to receive funds or help from the government, right? These are basic necessities, and I'm not condoning this particular speaker. I won't say the speaker's name, but I was listening to when I was 18 years old, and this is going to be an extreme saying, but I think it'll drive the point home. Women must get their boyfriends off of their breasts and put their children back on them. We must stop nursing adult men and let them be men. Let them lead from the front, not from the back. Get them out the basements and give them jobs. We must make it a point that we can raise up men and honor men to be the providers again and make sure that we keep the nuclear family there. Young men must see men. They must understand. We must get to a point where our neighborhood can challenge the children again, where we can make corrective steps like correctional bumpers when you go bowling. We must get to a point where we can, as a community, raise up our families and not want to go fight the neighbor when someone corrects the child again. We have to get back where it starts with the children, and it's going to take a few generations to get back there, but we have to start there. We have to make sure that we aren't separating our family. And there must be a level of responsibility to say, you know what, I heard some friends one time say, I got to watch my kids this weekend. You're the father, you're supposed to.
Yes.
Tell me something exceptional. Don't tell me what you're supposed to do.
So that takes us into a much deeper conversation. The last statistic I saw in the African-American community in the United States was that there was a 74% single mother rate. So it's quite high, right? So I've had Caucasian people say to me, well, why is that our responsibility? Isn't that their responsibility within their community? Why is that the government's responsibility? How would you answer that? What is the actual solution?
I think it's everyone's responsibility. I think it's the responsibility. Because see, here's this. Am I my brother's keeper, right? Am I not part of
the yes.
Right. That's exactly right. How do we get to a place where, you know what, you say, if my brother, if my neighbor, my partner in the next state, in the next country is not whole, if their family's not. The reason everything's happening now is because people start having this Me Too-ism. Especially in the 80s, everything was about me, and it was about how I can live and how I could shine in my own personal way. We have to get back to, let's everyone go back to camp again. Let's everyone make it a point where we can, not camp, I'm talking about where the kids can start playing and intermingling and they see others. I can tell you, when I went into the military, I was at Fort Benning. There were six or seven guys in my unit that had never seen an African-American man before. And it blew me away. They were from the middle of the country, for example, like Iowa and Nebraska. They had never seen a Black person. But guess what? By the time our 12 weeks was over, I can tell you some of the strongest bonds you'd ever see, some lifetime unbreakable bonds happen. We got to get to a point where we can make it, where we can just celebrate the differences and honor the sameness. And if we can do that, if we can just say, you know what? I love you for who you are, not for where I want you to be, and put down some of those other things, and get back into establishing that nuclear family, we can change the entire world.
Well, let's continue on this journey, man. It's important. And anyone who thinks that what happens in the African-American community or what happens in the Hispanic community or what happens in the Asian community doesn't impact them has their eyes closed. We are in this together, and together we must learn to solve this. And the start point, the core start point, is that each individual person must become culturally healthy and skilled. That should be our first order of business. Man, you're fascinating, man. So I love talking with you. I just love talking with you. You're full of wisdom. You've obviously done a lot of personal work to process through different things that you've been through in life and pain and also progress, right? And so I hope that this is a blessing to a lot of people. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you. My guest today has been Mark Sterling. We'll be right back.